I've had a lot of trouble with police officers from this station. We've had about 8 cameras on the property, hidden in hedges and everything. 2010.
He's killing people.
Northumbria police are searching for a suspect after a man was shot dead early today.
Police believe the man responsible is Raoul Moat.
He blames the police for breaking up his family and warned of more bloodshed.
You police have took too much off me over the years.
He had this deep-seated hatred of Northumbria police.
Now you think you can take your missus?
He believed he was harassed by the police.
I've reached you.
Raoul Moat is now wanted for the attempted murder of a policeman.
Are you taking me serious now?
The threat level to all of our staff was through the roof.
Move back! Keep moving, please!
It became almost like a soap opera.
Morty, it's Gaza. He will not shoot me.
He's still out there somewhere, in and around the small market town of Rothbury.
If you've seen a Hollywood movie, that's small scale compared to Rothbury.
I'm going to kill an innocent member of the public.
This must stop now.
Yeah, listen, I'm going to keep coming for you. You're going to have to kill me. But I'm never going to stop.
Manhunt, the Raoul Moat story. Newcastle, Steve Neal, Silver Commander, Specialist Firearms, 2010.
10 years ago, I was a Specialist Tactical Firearms Commander. Like every metropolitan city and areas, we have significant organised crime groups. Raoul Moat's relationship with a well-known crime family in Newcastle was based around being a trusted enforcer who had been engaged by that family for a long period of time. He helped them distribute drugs across nightclubs and pubs across Tyneside. If there was retribution to be meted out to rivals or whatever, he would do that.
Nicola Musgrove.
At the time, I was a detective inspector on the major investigation team. Raoul Moat was known to the police. He'd been involved in incidents of violence and particularly domestic-related violence.
In 2004, Raoul Moat was working as a doorman. Then his life changed when he met 16-year-old Samantha Stobart.
Samantha Stobart was quite a lot younger than him. They'd been in a relationship for about 6 years since she was 16 years old, and they had a young child together. It was a very volatile relationship.
Moat also had 2 children with another woman. Both were on the Child Protection Register. But despite concerns for their safety, both had been living with him and Samantha for 4 years.
Neil Adamson.
I was a detective chief superintendent. Because of his actions with his children, he had a history of involvement with social services and the police.
Moat felt victimised by both. He began secretly recording all his dealings with them.
There's cameras everywhere. To be honest with you, it was to do with use.
Special notes. Social services are...
He didn't like the police. He believed he was harassed by the police.
I want to know why these people are going all out to get me. They cannot stop me. If I got shot in the middle of the night, right, then I would get arrested for it.
He'd been arrested several times, but quite unusually, had never been charged. And he was only charged with the final offence, which is the assault on his daughter.
Moat had denied hitting the 9-year-old, but he was convicted and sent to Durham Prison for 18 weeks.
A photograph of a fair-haired, blue-eyed man.
While Moat was in prison, Samantha had met Christopher Brown, a 29-year-old karate instructor who'd moved to Tyneside from Slough. They started dating, and after a week, Samantha decided to break the news to Moat.
She told him that she met somebody else and that their relationship was over and that he was a police officer.
But Christopher was not a police officer. Terrified of Moat, Samantha had said this to try and make him stay away.
an elderly lady and a dark-haired woman drinking tea. Sally and Becky Brown, Christopher's mother and sister.
Christopher was an everyday lad.
He thought pretty much life was just a bit of a roller coaster, really, and ride with it, if you like. I can remember a friend of his was living up in Newcastle, and the friend had said, come up, see how you go. Telling him the nightlife was amazing, so that sold it straight away.
Life was fun. He was enjoying himself. He was teaching and just having a really good time.
Moat was enraged by the thought of Samantha seeing a policeman. He began plotting how he'd carry out his revenge when he was released in a matter of days.
He started making calls to his associates, planning what he was intending to do.
He asked his friend Carl Ness to source a firearm for his release.
Ness was a known criminal and a good friend of Moat's.
Thursday 1st, July 2010, Moat is released from prison. Neil Adamson.
He was collected from prison. He then met up with Carl Ness and the planning started to try and locate Christopher. He got his hands on a shotgun and some cartridges, which had been modified. He'd actually put small fishing weights into the cartridges to make a more devastating and impactive injury.
Friday, 2nd of July 2010, Birtley, 7 miles south of Newcastle.
Samantha had now moved out of Moat's house and was back living with her parents in Birtley.
That evening, Samantha and Christopher had plans. They were going out socialising in Gateshead, a few miles from her hometown of Birtley. They ended up at friends who were neighbours of her parents.
In the early hours, Carl Ness drove Moat to Birtley in a stolen white transit. As Ness waited in the van, Moat went looking for Samantha and Christopher, armed with a sawn-off shotgun.
He located them in the neighbour's house where they were all sitting, chatting and socialising.
Moat was sat outside the premises right under the front window and he sat there for over an hour.
They were talking about him and laughing about him.
And at one stage he actually texts Ness and says, I'm going to kick off real and proper.
2:40 a.m.
Christopher and Samantha left the house, walked along the short path to the gate where they were confronted by Moat, armed with a shotgun.
Moat shot him. Twice.
Around the corner, Carl Ness heard the shotgun blasts and drove off.
Samantha and her neighbours had ran back in, screaming, hysterically panicking. Moat reloaded the two barrels of the shotgun and shot a third cartridge into the back of his head at point-blank range.
It was an execution.
I need you to calm down. Hurry up, he's killing people.
Hurry up, he's killing people!
He's killing people. Who's killing people?
Why,
Moat? Who's killing people?
Why, Moat?
And then Moat pointed the gun through the window and shot Samantha. She was hit in the abdomen.
She also went down but managed to get herself out of view in the kitchen.
Moat fled on foot, hailing down a taxi, before disappearing into the Newcastle underworld.
Manhunt, day one.
Good morning. Northumbria police are searching for a suspect after a man was shot dead early today. A woman is also believed to have been shot and is in a critical condition in hospital.
Sophie Doty, crime reporter, The Chronicle.
That morning when we did the calls to the police control rooms, they mentioned that there'd been a shooting in Birtley.
A crime scene photo.
They had the green area in front of the house taped off with police tape.
I heard the screaming, he's got a gun, he's got a gun. And then I heard a gunshot.
Christopher's mother, Sally, and his sister, Becky, looking subdued.
We were going to a birthday party that afternoon on the estate where we live, and the police pulled up. And as they've got out of the car, we said, oh, God, you know, someone's in trouble. And of course, then they've come over to us and asked for me. Well, that was it. That's when the ground opened, basically.
I told them that they got it wrong. They need to go double check. And it wasn't until they'd mentioned his tattoo that he had on his shoulder. That's when reality kicked in. Horrendous.
I really can't remember much after that. It was just a blur.
Christopher's body being removed from the scene. Sophie Doty.
The assumption was, at that time, that this would be over quite quickly because Raoul would turn the gun on himself. I think that's what a lot of people assumed. No one knew where he was, and no one knew if he was still close by.
He was clearly an incredibly dangerous man, given his state of mind.
Our concern was that he was armed. He was angry. He was extremely dangerous.
The absolute priority of Northumbria Police from that point on was to locate and deal with Moat and neutralise the threat.
Saturday, 4th of July 2010, day two.
22 hours after the shootings in Berkeley, Raoul Moat calls Northumbria Police.
12:29 a.m.
This is the gunman from Berkeley last night. My name is Raoul Moat. Now, my girlfriend, she's having an affair with one of your officers. Was he the police officer, I wouldn't have shot him. You police have took too much off me over the years. How do you think you can take your missus? But the fact of the matter is, I'm not coming in alive. If you come anywhere near me, I'll kill you. I've got two hostages at the minute, right? Come anywhere near me, I'll kill them as well. I'm coming to get you. I'm not on the run. I am coming to get you.
Raoul Moat had shot his ex-girlfriend, Samantha Stobart, and killed her partner, Christopher Brown, because he wrongly thought he was a policeman. He was out for revenge. Any officer in his sights was now a target.
Neil Robson.
At the time, I was a sergeant within the police. That night, I travelled with another officer in an unmarked car. There was just the two of us. Literally, as I got to the junction with the A1, that's when I heard the radio transmission from David.
Tango 190, I've been shot. 291, somebody's just been shot. A1, A1, I've been shot.
A1, I've been shot.
I looked at my colleague and I said, did you hear that also? Got to the vehicle, and that's when obviously we saw David within the driver's side of the vehicle with significant facial injuries.
David's blood-streaked face.
And of course, he then made that second phone call to the police, basically saying, I've done it.
Are you taking me serious now? I've just downed your officer at the roundabout at the west end of Newcastle.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to destroy a few lives like you've destroyed mine. I'm going to keep coming for you. You're going to have to kill me.
Right.
And I'm never going to stop.
It sent shockwaves through the force. The threat level to all of our staff was through the roof. Until Moat was located and dealt with, they were potentially sitting ducks. And it was at that point that Steve Ashman took over as Gold Command.
Steve Ashman.
I was Assistant Chief Constable in Northumbria Police. We know he's capable. Because he's shot three people, he's killed one, and he's seriously injured two others. And he has a very, very clearly stated intention, and that intention is to carry on killing.
6 a.m.
Good morning. Detectives are linking an unprovoked gun attack on a police officer with their hunt for the suspected gunman Raoul Thomas Moat.
Sunday was the day that we had the first big press conference, and the country woke up to what a big story this was.
You have told us that the police are not taking you seriously. I can assure you, we are.
You've got to get up and running as fast as you can.
Every armed officer from the force is now on duty.
You literally throw everything that you've got at it.
Police are targeting areas in raids where Moat could be hiding out, and investigations focus on those that know him.
So we're basically loading the dice and trying to do something like that, to hoping that one of them will either lead us to him or he will arrive at one of those locations.
The police say they know some people in the area are harbouring Raoul Moat and they think they know who they are.
We carried out some fairly significant firearms tactics on individuals walking along the road who weren't Moat.
Police were getting intelligence on Moat's network in Newcastle, the friends and family where he could lay low.
A digital chart.
I wanted information and intelligence about Raoul Moat. I wanted to know as much about him as possible. And then that would give me the best opportunity and the operation the best opportunity of locating where he was.
But there was no sign of Moat. He'd gone to ground.
Monday, 5th of July 2010, Manhunt Day 3.
Then, in the early hours, police received a 49-page letter written by Moat. In it, he outlined why he'd shot Christopher Brown, Samantha Stobart, and PC Rathband.
Last night, I called 999 and declared war on Northumbria Police.
He went on, "The public need not fear me, but the police should, as I won't stop till I'm dead."
Emma Murphy, ITV North of England correspondent, 2010.
The press conference was absolutely shocking on the Monday. At that point, I think everybody realised that this was a situation that was very different from how they'd thought it was going to be.
Northumbria Police have drafted in extra support from surrounding forces. The public is being warned not to approach him.
By now, Northumbria detectives had CCTV footage showing Moat before the shootings with two men, Carl Ness and another friend, Khurram Awan. Moat had claimed they were his hostages and that he was prepared to kill them. But Awan had written to his family, telling them they didn't need to worry.
Later on, you'll become aware of the Lexus, and there's some footage from David's car which shows the Lexus driving around the roundabout with two individuals, Awan and Ness.
They didn't look like hostages to the police. Instead, it appeared they were scouting PC Rathband's car before he was attacked.
Tuesday, 6th of July 2010, Manhunt, Day 4. Rothbury, 30 miles north of Newcastle. Steve Neal.
On the Tuesday morning, we became aware the vehicle had been sighted. The first thing I did was implement a covert surveillance operation on that vehicle. And at that time, we also then become aware of the tent.
It looked as though Moat had set up camp in a field not far from the Lexus. His two supposed hostages were with him.
I was absolutely certain that the people from that car were in that tent. I gave the instruction for uniformed armed officers to move on that tent. And at the same time, I'd also put the police helicopter up. And as we were beginning to move, that's when two people emerged from the tent and started to walk away.
On hearing the activity of the police approaching, they've obviously thought the time's come to run.
There's three scenarios to me. One is, one of the two is Raoul Moat. Second scenario is, Raoul Moat, if he's not there, is in the tent. Or the third scenario is, Raoul Moat isn't there and they're going to meet him. The two people who were on foot were my primary concern. We've got their car, they've got no transport.
Neil Robson.
There were six cars in the convoy. We're travelling at speed to get there. He wanted us to carry out a fairly overt arrest, very dynamic arrest. The radio transmissions I'm now getting are from the helicopter, and they are talking about the individuals walking and where they are.
Junction by junction, minute by minute, to say we're 3 minutes away, 2 minutes away, 1 minute away.
We go from a situation where you can hardly hear yourself think because of the 50, 60 people in the control room to absolute silence. And that absolute silence happens because I shout across the room to everybody, armed operation in place, everyone shut up.
So we're aware that as we came around the next bend, the two individuals were going to be there. I'd instructed the officer on the command of Strike that he would deploy the distraction device.
Yeah, main name to the cars on the 6344, just round the next bend on the outfeet.
Footage of the arrest.
At that time, I thought one of those two people was Raoul Moat.
Very, very quickly, we were aware that Moat wasn't there.
If Moat wasn't with the two men on the road, it was possible he was still in the tent, shotgun in hand, lying in wait for officers. Another armed team was placed on standby to move in.
I then give the instruction to go and clear the tent.
Officers, we've got a V Lexus. Can you move directly to the tent and contain it? Is that received? Over. Car throw received.
A photograph of the crumpled tent.
But the tent was empty. Britain's most wanted man was nowhere to be found.
I believe my main mate was watching this. It became, for us, very, very important to locate and arrest Moat as soon as possible.
There's an ongoing police operation in Rothbury. People there are being advised to stay indoors.
I can confirm that both men, or the people we believe, were the hostages. Both are currently in police custody.
Moat's accomplices have now been caught. But he is still on the run, armed and very dangerous. But with Rothbury in the centre of rural Northumberland, he could be hiding anywhere.
There's so many places to hide. He used to go camping there. He also used to go shooting and rabbiting. So he knows the area really well.
A speeding police vehicle, Emma Murphy.
Early afternoon, we got to Rothbury, and it was a scene that I'd never witnessed on British streets. Do not leave your homes, lock your doors, close your windows, clear the streets. It was a most incredible sight.
There is a real feeling of concern here because Raoul Moat was said to have been seen just a few hundred yards behind me.
We had the road closures in place. We had armed checkpoints. There was a ring of steel around Rothbury.
With the police believing Moat was still in the area, a 2-mile exclusion zone was put in place. The town was locked down.
Wednesday 7th, July 2010, Manhunt, Day 5.
It's a very good morning to you. Still on the run, despite a massive police manhunt, Raoul Moat remains at large.
With no sign of Moat, officers focused on the evidence they found at the campsite on the outskirts of Rothbury.
From that tent, we recovered several items of invaluable evidence. The biggest piece of evidence was a dictaphone.
There were threats to individual police officers. There was a clear vendetta against Northumbria Police.
A small paragraph in the middle of those ramblings was a comment from Moat to say that he was sick of the sleazy lies that he was reading about himself and his family and his relationships in some of the national newspapers. And he says the rules have changed.
Moat.
The next lie I see in the paper, I'm going to kill him as a member of the public. But every lie I see in that paper, any paper, I'm going to kill him as a member of the public.
David Hartley.
The risk went literally through the roof.
More and more resources were needed in Northumbria to catch Moat, including covert firearms officers from other forces.
Today, 40 armed officers from the Met Police, along with armoured vehicles from Northern Ireland, arrived at police headquarters.
When the 40-plus officers from Metropolitan Police arrived, it was unbelievable in terms of the numbers of firearms officers we had in that area.
Hello there. Is it Jenny Carter, right?
The The concern that I had was in relation to information that a crime family from Newcastle that Moat had worked for before for a number of years, we were actively trying to support him, had smuggled in a rifle and other weapons to him.
And then you add into that that intelligence comes in that he has access to homemade explosives. We've got an added complexity there.
My thinking was, if you're Raoul Moat, what would you do? You would probably go to a location that you knew and you felt familiar with and you felt comfortable in.
One of the pieces of information that we had was about a possible location. It was a hide, it was like a poacher's hide.
The source of that information was somebody in prison, so we got him up to Rothbury as quickly as possible.
The police are being helped by a known associate of this man who, wearing a flak jacket, is now taking them to places where he knows Raoul Moat visited in the past.
Within the hide is potentially more with guns and homemade explosives.
The risk was huge, absolutely huge.
We want the element of surprise. We want the element of speed. We had none of that.
It's almost an ambush, if you like, of those officers. Me personally, I am becoming really quite anxious because that's the moment of extreme threat.
The firearms officers looking nervous. Neil Robson.
We did end up on the river in Rothbury in a location where clearly there had been a structure.
We found it. No Raoul Moat there though.
The police helicopter searched into the night, a signal to all for miles around that the fugitive is still free. They need to get to him before he gets to anyone else.
Thursday, 8th of July 2010, Manhunt Day 6. ITV correspondent Emma Murphy.
People were very aware that there was a killer in their midst and that actually he was roaming free somewhere near where they were trying to live their lives. And there was a huge amount of pressure on the police forces trying to apprehend him as the days went on.
He's told us he wants to kill more police officers, and he's told us he's going to kill innocent members of the public.
A packed public meeting in Rothbury reflected the level of concern following a day in which police revealed that gunman Raoul Moat's tactics may be changing.
What we've said is that there is an increasing position where we think he may be more of a threat to the wider community. That is, anywhere.
Well, that's alarming.
You know, it was quite anxiety-provoking, if that was to be honest.
I think there was a feeling that some people at some stages were getting frustrated. Why haven't you caught him? You know, he's only hiding in some trees or whatever, without understanding or appreciating the size and scale of the land around Rothbury. So it was a real palpable feel of pressure, non-stop pressure.
Extra help was coming from the military and one of Britain's best-known trackers.
I really didn't pay much attention until it became apparent that Mr. Moat, the perpetrator of these crimes, had gone into the woods and was playing a game of cat and mouse with the police. When I arrived at Pontyland, it was obviously a little chaotic, understandably.
He came up and he had a look at what we were doing, and he some unique skills around searching for individual people, about tracking people and tracking them through difficult terrain.
I wasn't there very long before they whacked me in a police car and drove me blue lights 150 miles an hour to Rothbury.
An RAF Tornado with surveillance equipment now augmenting a manhunt involving 14 police forces.
As we came into the village, I was surprised by the scale of the operation. If you've seen a Hollywood movie, that's small scale compared to what the police were running at Rothbury. It was very impressive.
While Mears reviewed the RAF's aerial photographs of the area, searchers found a discarded SIM card at the end of a track near the Cragside Estate, on the outskirts of Rothbury.
The police were obviously concerned that, one, I'm a civilian, two, I'm in the public eye. What would happen if I got hurt? How would this reflect on them?
He's very professional, he knows his stuff, and we were fairly confident. I put him with some very good, experienced officers who took him in and looked after him.
The Met team and I had a conversation about how we would work together. And the first thing they said was, well, you'll have to be behind us. And I said, I can't do my job if I'm behind you. I need to see the ground before you step on it. And we came to a decision on how I would behave if I spotted the suspect and what they would respond. And they liked that. And we very quickly came to an understanding that we could work together.
We were using everything we could possibly think of and every capability that we could bring to bear to locate this individual.
What changed at this point now was the sightings. Everybody was seeing him, every shadow was now moored.
We just finished news at 10 on the Thursday night and I was just heading up the road to get in my car. And as I was walking up the road, I saw this very tall guy walking towards me. It was just the two of us as we came towards each other. And I thought, oh, gosh, he looks really like Raoul Moat. He must have had a really awful week. And then he came closer and closer, and I started thinking, no, that is Raoul Moat. And he's walking towards me on this road. There's only me and him. I immediately rang to a colleague who was with the police just a little bit further down the hill. Couldn't get through to them, and Raoul Moat walked straight past them and disappeared.
But it was the break the police needed. They now knew that the most wanted man in Britain was still trapped somewhere inside their cordon.
I was a superintendent and I was a tactical firearms commander. It was clear that we were very close to Raoul Moat, and that he was in the very close proximity of that dense, really unmanaged woodland around Rothbury.
Intensive searching continued all night with the police chopper assisting teams on the ground who focused their attention near the river in the village.
Friday, 9th July 2010, Manhunt Day 7. Emma Murphy.
The Friday was a really strange day because I'd seen him the night before. I'd spent the morning at the police station going through what I'd seen, and it all seemed to have gone incredibly quiet.
Talk about your call of duty then, what you were talking about.
But in the background, a major covert operation was about to begin. Ray Mears and the RAF's aerial photography had pinpointed an area of woodland just outside Rothbury where Moat could be laying low.
The pressure at that moment was immense because all of a sudden I am the point of the spear and I do not want to let anybody else down.
Dense woodland.
We move down the track and I start to find a fresh trail of depressed heather with some broken sticks. Exactly what you'd expect to find if someone is walking, collecting firewood in the dark without a torch. That, to me, was the first definite sign I had of somebody in that woodland within that time frame.
You've got an area that you're trying to search that you actually believe he's in, and you're going to send a member of the public in there to try and find him. I think, in hindsight, I'd have been roundly criticised had anything gone wrong with that.
As we go down this trail, something moved in the woods. I think it was probably a roe deer. We put up at that point. But everyone was very alert at that moment, and, you know, guns up, ready. I knew we were getting close. I could sense it. I could definitely sense that. My alertness level had really raised.
Hour by hour, Ray Mears and the police search teams had been tightening the net.
I think they got as close to him as anybody did. I think that activity itself made Moat think, that's it, I'm done for here.
And back in Rothbury, Moat was about to surprise everyone.
A convoy of police vehicles speeding past news cameras. 7:20 p.m.
Can everybody
everybody just please keep moving for their own safety?
Can you come back for your own safety, please?
Move back, in a line. Keep moving, please.
The cordon's being moved away from our initial vantage point here for everybody's safety.
He was by the side of the river. We've got him.
Moat on the river bank.
Move back.
Britain's biggest manhunt for many years appears to be drawing to a dramatic conclusion here.
Police are, as we speak, in a confrontation situation with the suspect.
He's lying down in long grass, apparently threatening to kill himself with a gun aimed at his head.
This wasn't just a random walk down the street. They're getting very close to me. The game's up. I've had enough. And he came in and gave himself up.
The way everybody reacts in the control room when Moat is spotted is disbelief that it's him.
Helicopter footage of the standoff.
The police negotiator is talking to Raoul Moat.
Listen to me, Raoul. Ignore them. You're the most important thing in this, not them.
I heard Moat say, I haven't got a dad or something, and nobody cares about me.
His spirit was broken. He hadn't been eating properly. He hadn't been sleeping.
Wordy. He looked grubby. And
as if he didn't know what to do with himself.
Yeah. We understand that he had a sawn-off shotgun. The police weren't sure what else he had, but he had at least a sawn-off shotgun.
We had the intelligence saying he's got explosives. He's hidden bombs around that area. He's perhaps wearing body armour. You can't dismiss those. Now we've got to look at how do we bring him into custody safely.
Moat at one stage said, listen, you're not taking me into custody. I'm not spending the rest of my life in a white box, in a cell. And you're not shooting me. It might come as a surprise to some. He has the right to life. I was offered a piece of technology, a piece of equipment that was undergoing tests at the time, an X-rep taser that can temporarily disable, in the same way that a conventional taser does, it can disable somebody, and that might allow us to close in and detain him without recourse to lethal force.
If the officer believes that he's about to take his own life, if there's a change in his manner or he gives an announcement, then that would be then the threshold to use the long-range taser to try and save his life.
He always said he didn't believe me in terms of the messages that I was putting out.
You still have a future. Give yourself up now.
When he was told of the fact that Christopher wasn't a police officer, he was quite shocked at that.
It was now, with police surrounding a suicidal Moat, that events took a turn for the bizarre.
The footballer, Paul Gascoigne, has arrived.
Paul Gascoigne has arrived?
Paul Gascoigne has arrived.
I've got a jacket, I've got a dressing gown, I've got some chicken, I've got some bread, I've got a can of lager, I've got a fishing rod.
That's the point where it almost seemed like this entire situation had become totally ridiculous.
Just all I want to show is, Moat, it's Gaz, where you? And I guarantee he will shout his name out. I'm here.
He turned up at the cordon and was wanting to speak with Moat and resolve issues.
The former footballer wasn't allowed anywhere near him.
He will not shoot me.
Now, pouring with rain, an exhausted man surrounded by 20 armed police officers.
That Friday was a really grim day. It was rainy, it was cold, and we were stood in this field a few hundred feet from where Moat was, trying to listen to the negotiation between the police and him. And it went on for hours and hours.
Saturday, 10th of July, 2010. Manhunt, day 8.
He wanted to bring this to an end. And from the comments he made, it was apparent that it was going to end there and then.
01:10 a.m.
He moved the gun from under his chin to his temple and began talking in final words. And that was the tipping point to say, right, we need to try and save his life now. There is no time.
Night vision footage.
Police marksmen open fire with the X-Rap taser.
Take that gun away, take that gun away.
When I heard the shout over the radio of shots fired, it was one of those heart-dropping moments where you just think, my God.
It's 1:28 in the morning. There's just been one single sound of gunfire followed by the shouts of men saying, get that gun down, get that gun down, get that gun down. An ambulance has now been sent to the scene. The doors are open and they are moving somebody into the back of it.
2 o'clock, Saturday morning. Britain's biggest manhunt in recent history is over.
We can confirm that a shot or shots have been fired, and it is believed the suspect has a gunshot wound.
It's just outside accident, an emergency now here at Newcastle. General, armed police surrounding it.
Neil Adamson.
When someone shoots themselves in the head with a shotgun, I don't think you need to be a consultant surgeon to work out that the chances of survival are not good.
He was pronounced dead at 2:20 this morning.
The taser hadn't worked. Moat had killed himself. He'd escaped the police and justice for the final time.
When Moat shot himself, another life had been lost. We wanted to give Moat the opportunity to give us his account of what had happened and also answers for the family.
Sally Brown.
To me, he was a coward. He took his own life, but he needed to answer. Where's the justice in that?
A court building, then police mugshots of Moat's two accomplices. Carl Ness and Khurram Awan stood trial in 2011, charged with helping Moat commit his crimes. Awan was jailed for 20 years. Ness was given a 40-year sentence.
Moat should have been stood in the dock as well, facing justice, and I'm convinced he would have never seen the light of day again.
These were the most horrific crimes. He couldn't have perpetrated those offences without the assistance of Ness and Awan.
An inquiry into the police operation cleared the force of any misconduct.
There is very little I look at in reflection to say would be done differently if that rolled out today. It was a really professional policing operation by Northumbria Police.
Gold Commander Steve Ashman.
Do I think it changed me? No, I don't think it did. It was tiring, it was exhausting. You know, I don't think any of us slept for a week.
Neil Adamson.
The threat that was actually posed by Moat, it presented a challenge that I hope I never have to face again.
It's highly pressurised for me as an individual. Tragic.
It's a week I'll never forget.
Steve Neil.
Well, for the rest of my service, I carried a map of Cragside in my daybook, and I carried that with me to remind me of the fact that people were working 24 hours, 36 hours, all with one common goal of bringing this murderer to justice.
We focused on Rowan Moat, we focused on the manhunt, but it seemed to me is that we forgot about the most important people here, were the victims.
Samantha Stobart recovered from the physical injuries she sustained in the shooting. She rebuilt her life with her family. A photograph of David Rathband. PC David Rathband was blinded when Moat shot him. 18 months later, he took his own life.
The lasting effect for me is that I don't feel Christopher Brown has been remembered. And at some point, Christopher seems to have been forgotten about.
Nicola Musgrove. Christopher Brown's mother Sally and sister Becky visiting a remembrance chapel. Becky.
For us, every year comes and goes. We don't celebrate, obviously, but we think. Of course it brings back memories, but I try not to think of the bad. I just try and think of the good.
Do you think people
don't remember Christopher, but they do remember Moat.
Yeah, I think so, because the first name that comes to everyone's mind when they hear about it is Moat. And it's a shame, because Christopher seems to have been forgotten about quite a bit over the years.
I was his mum, so, you know, I don't. It's like all these mums that have lost children, you don't want it forgotten.
A card on flowers that reads, "Miss you so much, love you, bro."